Support for podcasting on KBIA comes from Grindstone Fitness Studio, a full-service gym offering equipment for traditional exercise like weight and cardiovascular training, as well as specialized classes. Choices include personal training, spinning, yoga, Pilates, and more. All classes taught by certified professionals. More information is available at 443-4447, Grindstone Fitness Studio, 3005 Chinaberry Drive in Columbia.
From the Missouri School of Journalism, welcome to Global Journalist. I'm David Reed. Since the military takeover in Egypt, journalists have been attacked from all sides of the conflict. When security forces shot Tamer Abdel Raouf at a military checkpoint a week ago, the Egyptian daily newspaper reporter became the fifth journalist to die on the job. On that same day, authorities raided a Turkish news agency and arrested its bureau chief. Many foreign journalists have been detained, attacked, and some have been killed. And the international press is also under verbal attack, slammed with accusations of bias against the military leadership or even bias against ousted President Mohamed Morsi and his followers. Is there truth to the accusations that foreign correspondents lack objectivity and are ignoring the real story in Egypt? An advocate for journalists and the author of a book on Egypt will join our program today to discuss the state of the media inside this chaotic country. But first, World Watch, our international news summary with Raymond Tungekar.
U.S. plans to lead an airstrike against the Syrian regime hit a snag today. U.S. and British officials are facing stiff domestic opposition to a military attack to punish Syria for using chemical weapons. Senior Obama administration officials met today with congressional leaders who've complained about not being properly briefed. In Britain, Prime Minister David Cameron announced his country would not participate in military action after Parliament voted it down. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon is calling for restraint so weapons inspectors have time to complete their investigation in Syria.
For the first time since its creation 6 months ago, United Nations forces joined soldiers from the Democratic Republic of Congo in the fight against rebels. The skirmish took place in the eastern city of Goma. The Congolese blamed the Rwandan government for instigating the attacks by the rebel group M23. Rwanda denied the accusation. Peace talks between Israeli and Palestinian negotiators stalled Monday after a deadly raid killed three Palestinians in a West Bank refugee camp. Palestinian officials condemned the attack and called off a round of peace talks, though U.S. officials deny the meetings were canceled. Direct negotiations between the two sides began earlier this month after a three-year break. The skirmish came just a day after Israel approved plans to construct 1,500 homes in occupied East Jerusalem. In Cuba, Colombia's government and the leftist rebel group known as FARC resumed peace talks this week with the goal of ending nearly 50 years of conflict. President Juan Manuel Santos said Tuesday that he's willing to meet with the rebel leader Timochenko. Timochenko is wanted by the government on various criminal charges and is thought to be hiding in Venezuela. The sensational five-day trial of Chinese politician Bo Xilai concluded this week. The former regional Communist Party chief and Politburo member is charged with bribery, embezzlement, and abuse of power. Bo denied the charges, and on the last day of the trial in the eastern city of Jinan, he accused the government's primary witness of being in love with his wife. State media reports that a verdict could come in early September. Chinese websites were down earlier this week as the country suffered the largest cyber attack in its history. The distributed denial-of-service attack started at 2 a.m. on Sunday and reportedly caused a 32% drop in traffic for websites with the Chinese .cn domain. The motives of the attack are unclear. China's military has come under fire in recent months over allegations it mounted its own cyber attacks against foreign targets. Der Spiegel has revealed new details about Apalachi, the National Security Agency's surveillance program in Europe. The German news weekly had access to secret documents from whistleblower Edward Snowden. In one example, the NSA videotaped the conversations of European diplomats to the United Nations. In a related development, Russian newspapers report that Snowden spent 2 days in the Russian consulate in Hong Kong before flying into Moscow. Russia later gave Snowden temporary asylum. In Japan, officials are raising concerns over containment efforts at the crippled Fukushima Daiichi nuclear plant, more than 2 years after a tsunami and earthquake caused a meltdown there. Nuclear regulators criticized the plant's operator, Tokyo Electric Power Company, after it acknowledged that 300 tons of radioactive water had seeped from a storage tank at the site, with 200,000 additional tons at risk of leaking. The Japanese government this week announced plans to take over cleanup efforts at the plant.
That's it for World Watch. The guests for our program focusing on the media in Egypt are Sharif Mansour, the Middle East and North Africa Program Coordinator for the Committee to Protect Journalists, and Adil Iskander. He's a Georgetown University professor and author of the book Egypt in Flux, Essays on an Unfinished Revolution. Adil will join us later in the program, but first, Sharif Mansour. Welcome to Global Journalist.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
How widespread are these attacks and detentions of foreign journalists?
Well, overall, we've seen an increase in the number of attacks against journalists, specifically since the military took over on July 3rd. We've documented for the first time unprecedented number of killed journalists, including for the first time a killed foreign journalist in Egypt. Since 1992, we've been documented every case of journalists who've been killed while doing their work in Egypt. And you can think of it this way. Since 1992, a total of 10 were killed. And since July 3rd, a total of 5 were killed. So just over the 7 weeks that we had under this current interim government, we've seen half of the journalists that have been killed over the last 20 years or so killed in Egypt. In addition to that, one of the things that were good on Egypt since the revolution was there weren't many journalists behind bars in our analysis for a longer period. It was just detentions. This time we've seen so far since July 3rd, 7 journalists behind bar. We've seen for the first time since the revolution also raids on TV stations. Since July 3rd, there were as many as 9 of them, and including also shutting down those TV stations permanently. And
right.
Yeah. As of today, there is at least 5 of them who are not operating.
Yeah, it'll take us back to that day in July when General El-Sisi announced that Morsi had been deposed. What was it like in Egypt and in the media?
Well, at this point, we were told by people who were working in the TV stations that are sympathetic to President Morsi, horrific stories about how the security have basically stormed in the police onto those stations and rounded up everyone who were there, confiscated all the equipments, and a total of 200 people were taken into custody. And over several days, they were all interrogated about their relationship to the Muslim Brotherhood and accused or charged of preparing for a coup. And you can think about this. One of the people just put it to us. He was the last person to be on a Muslim Brotherhood affiliated TV station who said, I was being accused of something I didn't even had any time to talk about.
Right.
Because the minute El-Sisi finished his speech, there was no commentary. All of those channels have been shut down.
And he was accused of inciting violence?
Inciting violence, and already 3 of the people who were arrested that night still behind bars on those accusations. Every 15 days, their incarceration is renewed. We don't know for how long yet.
And Sharif, you spent most of your life in Egypt and now you're working closely with the media. What was it like for you personally to see this this crackdown and the bloodshed and the changes that took place after the military takeover of the government?
Well, it was a big disappointment because, first of all, this is one of the reasons Egypt had a revolution against Mubarak, and this is one of the reasons that Mubarak was ousted in the first place, is that he was not able to respect media and handle dissent. And that's also one of the reasons why Morsi were ousted, is that he and his allies in the media and in the government have been intolerant of the media, have been very hostile of their critics. And to see that happening with the current government, it shows the underlying fact that nothing has really changed in Egypt. We just have an interim government after another that use the same tactics, use the same measures against critics, and keep those structural limitations on press, on the press, in the media, to use against their opponents. So that's the biggest disappointment.
And what was the initial reaction of Egyptian journalists and free press advocates to the military's censorship and media suppression?
Well, it was a mixed bag, but the what was disappointing also is that a lot of the people who advocated press freedom and some of the outspoken critics of President Morsi during his time and President Mubarak before, they were in many ways tactically justifying and okay with going after those pro-Morsi voices. And there was, their argument was that those stations were in fact inciting violence. A lot of them have had very strong commentary that in many ways went after those specific journalists who were criticizing Morsi. One of them, for example, like said that opposition should be killed. Opposition leaders, one of them said that those who criticize Morsi should be beaten to the ground. So there was an element of there of satisfaction to see those people behind bars or incarcerated. But also over the long term, a lot of people have come to realize that this is not a temporary action, and it's not really justified, because so far more and more people are being incarcerated, more and more people are being attacked, and the amount of censorship is increasing, not decreasing by time. So a lot of those people are now speaking up against this kind of like nationalistic McCarthyist spirit that is dividing the media and justifying attacks against journalists.
Right. And you wrote in a special report for CPJ that Morsi's overthrow cast into stark relief a deeply partisan and polarized Egyptian press. Can you expand on that more cultural point?
Well, the polarization started during Morsi's tenure, and it happened mainly because there was a culture of intolerance to dissent by President Morsi. His supporters in the government and on the ground have waged a campaign against independent media that included physical assaults, sometimes intimidation, direct intimidation to critical voices. And President Morsi himself, in at least two separate occasions, threatened the media and accused them of sponsoring a coup against him and trying to distort his image and so on. So there was this kind of like polarization already between those who support President Morsi and those who do not support President Morsi. When the military took over, this polarization was furthered and became more of a propaganda war. So the fact that the military have cracked down on pro-Morsi voices, the remaining pro-Morsi voices who were sympathetic before became a lot more stronger in their support of President Morsi. And because there wasn't many ways that Morsi supporters can voice their demands, they became sort of a spokesperson for them. On the other side, the military and its supporters in the media, including in state media and some private stations have kind of like taken their revenge on pro-Morsi voices. For the year that they have lived under Morsi, they've been attacked, they've been assaulted, and this was their moment of kind of like paying the dues back to Morsi, and there were like a turning table action that took place. Some of the measures that Morsi have implemented and started was basically turned over against his supporters.
Right.
And in the same time, we've seen that they adopted the military lines. We don't know if this is coming straight out of the military by orders, or it's coming from the partisan nature of their disappointment with and
their own bias,
opposition to President Morsi. But there are a lot of indications about media coverage that are one-sided, that's very critical of and not sympathetic to any violations that took place against Muslim Brotherhood, including in two separate incidents. One of them was outside the Presidential Guard, and like around 50 Muslim Brotherhood demonstrators were killed by army, and most of the local press, including the media and the private stations, only presented the army perspective of the events, which was that those were trying to storm into the military camp. And no one have discussed even or given any voice to the other narrative, which they were just demonstrating outside. And that was the narrative that was supported by a lot of international news organizations and also by human rights organization who reviewed eyewitnesses of the event and documentation of what happened.
Okay, we'll bring in Adel Iskander now to the conversation. He's joining us. Welcome.
Thank you.
Do you think that what's your opinion on whether the bias at TV stations that have been allowed to stay on the air reflect the perspective of management, or whether they're pressured by the military to toe the line?
Well, I mean, this is probably the Pandora's box. We don't really know why news organizations have decided to take such a steadfast position in support of both the military and the interim government. But as your previous guest mentioned, many of those news organizations, primarily private, and in fact some of them were extremely supportive of the revolutionary movement after the toppling of Mubarak. Many of them have effectively moved to the side of the military and in opposition to the Muslim Brotherhood for a variety of reasons. My view is, or my sort of speculation is, that there was a feeling of existential threat during the past year. The Muslim Brotherhood, and various other affiliated groups were supporting, almost a sort of an attack against these private networks. Not, of course, an attack in the physical sense, but at least an attempt to silence them. The media production city, which houses most of the private networks, was besieged on two separate occasions. In one instance, over a span of several weeks, threats came through to various television presenters and hosts, et cetera, for taking a fairly sort of critical position vis-a-vis the Morsi government over the previous year. And I feel as though that was a major break in the relationship between some of these private news organizations, as well as their television hosts, as well as some of the newspapers and the Muslim Brotherhood. That it was no longer just about maintaining a watchdog role, but it became a genuine enmity. And so, when the moment came where Morsi was toppled, many of them were happy to cheer on the removal of Morsi from power, and the eventual vilification of the Muslim Brotherhood.
Well, Adel and Sharif, let's talk about the Western media and how they're portraying this, what's happening inside the country, and maybe perhaps missing some of this sentiment in the streets. The State Information Service wrote a letter to foreign news outlets recently that said, quote, "Egypt is feeling severe bitterness toward some Western media coverage that is biased to the Muslim Brotherhood." for Sharif first, do you think that there are reasons and justifications for this statement?
Well, I wouldn't give any government a right to justify an oppression or a harassment of any perspective, as long as those journalists are providing their perspective without inciting violence or breaking the laws of the country that has to do with other people's privacy, very like acceptable limitations on freedom of the press and the International Declaration of Human Rights. We don't think it's the role of the government to control and guide any coverage of any perspective. And we think that this is coming from the same spirit of intimidation and tactics of harassment that is accompanied by shrill accusation of those journalists to be agents of the some international powers, foreign countries who do not want or who do not seek Egypt's interest. And we think that this is also appeared to be the basis for several attacks against journalists.
Yeah, the mob attacks against Western journalists. Yeah, does this reflect popular mood and anger, or do you think that there's the security forces have a hand behind it?
Well, it is like from our perspective, we've seen a lot of ordinary citizens, bystanders, like arresting journalists and doing citizen arrest and turning them on to police stations and to the army. And we've documented over the last 2 weeks alone at least 13 of those similar events. So we think this is going beyond the government now, and that a lot of segments in the Egyptian society are believing those propaganda shrill accusations and are acting on it.
And Adela, what's your opinion on whether foreign journalists are reporting through the Western perspective and not aware enough of what the actual aspirations of the Egyptian people are, and also comment on these attacks?
Well, I mean, I agree with everything. As a preface, I agree with everything that Sharif had just stated. I'm just going to add a couple of points. I think it's easy to have missed what happened in Egypt over the past year. I mean, Egypt sort of disappears from the news, and Western reporters will often move on to, a much more compelling story elsewhere. So I think maybe there was a little bit of a gap in the coverage of Egypt, that basically the economy had sort of descended into sort of catastrophic levels, that Egyptians have become increasingly disenchanted with the Muslim Brotherhood. So the view of the Muslim Brotherhood as having been victorious in July of 2012 with the rise of Morsi, and the view of the Muslim Brotherhood in the Egyptian street now is something that may have been missed. But nevertheless, the manner in which the Egyptian state has dealt with the media, especially those that are considered oppositional, is in no way excusable. I mean, let's go back to the statement that you mentioned. Mm-hmm. The State Information Service is an institution of the state that has an extremely problematic history. I mean, this is an organization that has been extremely supportive of Hosni Mubarak for many, many years, and is actually very much involved in trying to silence dissent within the media. So I wouldn't take any statement critiquing the international media very seriously. In fact, I think the more important criticism of Western coverage actually comes from some of the Egyptian media rather than from the state itself. So when you watch some Egyptian news network, you're able to see sort of another perspective. It's not a holistic perspective. It's not consummate in any conceivable way, but it is another perspective. And if one were to talk about the Egyptian state's relationship to Western media, if they believe that there are stories that have been missed by the international media, they could do whatever they need to do to facilitate access for the Western journalists, so they could see a perspective that is different, perhaps, from what they've seen when they were in Rabaa al-Adawiyya or when they were with where they're listening to Muslim Brotherhood interlocutors. So, in essence, the Egyptian state is still as as clunky and as clumsy as it's ever been in dealing with Western media. And if it watches or sees or hears things that it doesn't like, it reacts with this strong aversion and sort of a claim to sort of nationalistic bitterness that, and yes, indeed, Egyptians are upset that they, you know, that the perspective that they see, or at least their criticism of the Muslim Brotherhood, is not making its way to the international media with as much salience. But the manner in which the state addresses this is deeply problematic. In fact, any state's involvement in this process is ends up becoming more self-incriminating than helpful in any conceivable way. So I think if Western news media are interested in covering the Egyptian story in a far more complex way, they need to afford the Egyptian story the same standards and principles that they would afford a domestic story, right, which is to say that there must be other perspectives, that it's not just about, you know, victim and victor, and it's not about, you know, there aren't two sides of the story, but rather there is sort of a whole roster of different perspectives.
We're going to have to leave it there. We've run out of time, but I really appreciate you and Sharif for giving us that inside information about what's really happening inside Egypt and what's happening to the media there. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Global Journalist is produced by the Reynolds Journalism Institute and the Missouri School of Journalism. Joining us today were CPJ Program Coordinator Sharif Mansour and author Adil Iskander from Georgetown University. Global Journalist is directed by Travis McMillan, audio by Pat Akers. Raymond Tungakar is our executive producer. Victoria Mescate and Zahra Rasul were the lead producers. Free Press Watch is up next, and please join us again next week for another Global Journalist. I'm David Reed.
And now Free Press Watch, a weekly segment on Global Journalist where we bring you a rundown of major events affecting press freedom around the world. I'm Sasu Siegelbaum. Today's news comes from India and Afghanistan. Five men suspecting of gang raping an Indian photojournalist in Mumbai were arrested on August 25th. According to the Associated Press, police arrested four men in Mumbai and a fifth in New Delhi. The victim, a 22-year-old female intern for a Mumbai-based lifestyle magazine, was on assignment with a male colleague to photograph a textile mill. Five men approached the journalist and told her that she couldn't take photos unless she had permission from the mill supervisor. The men then tied up and beat the male reporter while raping the woman. The gang rape has sparked public outrage and revived national discussions on the safety of women in India. The incident also follows the infamous fatal assault of a New Delhi college student in December 2012. According to the Times of India, political parties and media organizations have demanded the severest punishment for the perpetrators, as well as a full reevaluation of India's rape-related laws. The Press Freedom NGO, Afghan Journalists Safety Committee, published a report analyzing recent attacks against media workers in Afghanistan. The document revealed 41 incidents in the past 6 months, which included threats, beatings, kidnappings, and two deaths. The report, which documented 23 attacks on media workers and one killing in 2012, has already shown a 78% increase of violence in 2013. In its report, the committee wrote that 2013 is also a crucial year for the country because it marks the completion of the security transition from NATO to Afghan forces. The committee also warned of a possible increase in violence against journalists and tighter controls on information due to the upcoming 2014 presidential elections. For more information on these and other events affecting press freedom around the world, please visit our website at globaljournalist.org. Thank you for joining us this week on Global Journalist. I'm Sasu Siegelbaum.